Come to order.
Let's see, did I hide my blue? The first item we're going to look at is House Bill 2093. House Bill 2093 was passed out of this committee with a due pass, and after it was passed out, we realized that some amendments that we had taken on a bill had a problem with it. We brought it back, sent the amendments through Legislative Council, and it has been corrected. And if the committee will look at House Bill 2093, what it does is on page 1, line 2, it deletes Oregon Statute 673.625 to bring it into compliance with the amendments. On the page 2, it deletes lines 1 through 26, which was the entire section 4, and adds section 4 was deleted by amendment. Subsequent sections were not renumbered. And those are the amendments that will correct the original amendments. So with that, what's the pleasure of the committee?
Move the amendments be adopted, Mr. Chair.
I don't know. That's
Representative Otto moves that the amendments marked Legislative Council House Bill 2093-3 21883A1 be adopted. Is there any further discussion on the amendments to 2093? If not, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Campbell?
Aye.
Gilmore?
Aye.
Otto?
Aye.
Moon?
Aye.
Chipper?
Aye.
Robert?
Aye. The bill, when it went out, was assigned to Representative Gilmore and was placed on the consent calendar. Representative Campbell.
It's now in an amended form?
It is amended form.
Okay. Before we make a motion to move it to the floor, since we voted on this initially, we received a fiscal analysis. I wonder if somebody could explain that. A fiscal analysis to me.
Did you get that fiscal analysis there?
Yeah, I'm sure that I do.
Okay. Do you, I can't find my copy of it.
I can try, or I can call someone from Legislative Council and have them come down.
Would you rather have somebody from LC, Representative Campbell,
excuse
do you
me,
want
Legislative
us to?
Fiscal.
Why don't you go ahead and try? Because there's no sense in holding it up.
Okay.
If there's a
go ahead, Diane.
Okay, now, do you have a specific question, or are you just?
Well, for example, effect on expenditures, 8385 to 8587, from 184,181 to 368,363. I'd like to have that kind of an increase in my allowance.
I believe that the reason probably for that would be the extension of the board.
Extension of the board in this bill.
So they've doubled their.
Oh, current. I'm sorry. No.
I didn't think.
I think there's something else there. That
I'm glad you brought that up.
I'm sorry. I can't answer that. I'd be glad to. Let's get that information.
Mr. Chairman, if we could, then hold off.
I would. I'm glad you brought that up, Representative Campbell. It did slip by me. I will have someone from the appropriate group come in to explain it to the committee.
Thank you, sir.
And we'll let 2093 rest until we do get an explanation. If you want to check and see if anyone's coming in. Okay. With 2093 resting for until we have further explanation of the revenue impact, we will go on to House Bill 2186, and it deals with explosives. Is there anyone here? I haven't got a sign-up sheet on this. Pat Franzen, State Fire Marshal.
Against it. Where are you?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Pat Franzen, Chief Deputy State Fire Marshal in the Office of State Fire Marshal. I'm representing State Fire Marshal Olin L. Green with Offices in Labor and Industries Building. House Bill 2186 was introduced at request of State Fire Marshal to, one, increase fees, two, to repeal ORS 480.240, dealing with certificate registration of the manufacturer, ORS 480.245, pertaining to dealing with explosive without certificate, and ORS 480.250, dealing with a waiting period for issuance of a certificate for a manufacturer or dealer. Our purposes in repealing ORS 480.240, 245, and 250 is to eliminate redundancy. Federal laws relating to explosives, Chapter 40, Title 11 of Public Law 91-452, Section 181.141 and Subpart D, Licenses and Permits, indicates that each person intending to engage in business as a manufacturer of or dealer in explosive materials shall obtain a license for the business to be operated. That's handled by the Bureau of Alcohol and Tobacco Firearms. I've taken liberty to simplify the language in the federal regulation by limiting some of the verbiage. Points being that the Oregon statutes above titled are redundant in nature and provide no increased safety to the citizens of Oregon. The fee increases from $5 to $20 is necessary to cover administrative costs to our agency dealing with the processing of explosive certificates. The process assures that ORS 480.225 is met. 480.225 requires that a person, one, has not been convicted of a misdemeanor in involving the use or threatened use of force, violence, or a dangerous deadly weapon. Or two, he has not been convicted of and is not under indictment of any felony. Three, is not a fugitive of justice. Four, has not been adjudged to be mentally ill or mentally deficient. Five, is at least 21 years of age.
Excuse me again.
And six, did not misrepresent themselves in the application. And seven, is not an unlawful user of any depressant, stimulant, or controlled substance. Those seven items are incorporated in federal regulations also. The fee has not been modified since the 71 legislature, and as you know, mailing costs, staff costs increased significantly during that time period. We anticipate it takes between a half an hour to three quarters of an hour to process the permit, reviewing the material, the application permit, and issuing of the permit, and does not include mailings. We anticipate an annual number in the neighborhood of 600 based upon our experiences. This is the first year that we have had a certificate that only lasted for 1 year duration. Up till the last legislature, the certificate of possession was good forever. This certificate of possession is for the user. There are no manufacturers of explosives in Oregon. Since the federal regulations took effect in the early 70s, no manufacturer has chosen to function in Oregon. So the three statutes that we are asking to be repealed have not shown any need. Are there any questions that I could answer regarding this?
I'd like to open up the questions by asking, Mr. Franzen, I realize that you haven't had a raise for some time, but you're asking this committee to for a 400% increase, right, a one shot.
Right.
Was that, is it because you haven't come into the legislature on a periodic time schedule, or is it that they didn't approve of it in the past time?
We've not asked for a raise or increase in that fee schedule before. We've tried for two legislatures in conjunction with the law enforcement agencies to get the statutory language, Oregon statutory language, in harmony with the federal regulations and address some of the needs the local law enforcement wanted to control this substance. We've not chosen to compound that with fee increases.
Are there any further questions, Mr. President? Yeah.
Mr. President, even though we don't have any manufacturers of explosives now, why do you want to eliminate them from the statutes? Isn't it possible that someone at some future date might want to manufacture explosives in the state? In that case, they'd be at a dead end because they wouldn't have anybody to go to even to get a certificate.
They can get, and right now licenses and permits are required through the alcohol, tobacco, and firearm section. It is required to have a permit. All our statute does is duplicate that effort. It would not prohibit anyone from manufacturing or dealing. All it does is just set another level of government for them to go through.
Representative Skinner.
Now, the same thing applies if you're a dealer?
Dealer or a manufacturer.
Dealer or manufacturer, okay.
Representative Campbell.
In your situation where you're licensing, they're providing a certificate for a dealer. Is that also under federal control now?
The dealer is. The certificate for the individual to possess is not under federal control.
There's no federal control if I want to go out and use explosives to blow a stump or something of that kind.
No federal requirement.
Okay,
Oregon requirement, yes, requires that you meet the criteria I just described as far as having no past criminal record, mental record, to purchase explosives and possess. But the person who sells that to you, the distributor or the retailer, must have federal clearance, federal licensing permits to handle and sell to you.
What's your budget level then for this particular activity?
$600 times $5, $5.
Is that your budget level?
That's budget level for that particular function, yes.
What's it costing you to do it?
Probably 3-4 times that much. It takes, as I said, roughly an average of half to three quarters of an hour just to receive the application, review for completeness, send the application or part of the application to the state police for a records check, state hospital for a mental check, come back upon validation, then issue the certificate and mail back to the person.
How have you been funding that process?
With all of our other operations.
So what you're saying is you've been transferring funds from your other operations to meet this requirement.
To subsidize this, yes.
What you're trying to do now is get this to stand on its own.
Just cost effective, yes. As indicated, until the last legislature, all the certificates that were issued were for a lifetime period, and that bothered ourselves as far as knowing what was out there and who had permits and the legal law enforcement agencies also. It was changed to a one-year thing. We really had no idea for sure how many of those permits were a one-shot item or were those who were like contractors, road builders, loggers that might need a continuing thing, and now we have a better picture of what that program
Mr.
is.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Campbell.
If I understand what you're saying is until last legislative session, if I wanted a certificate, I'd pay you $5 and that'd be a lifetime certificate. That was the only $5 you got from me.
That's right.
Now you want to get $20 every year from me.
Primarily.
More than just an increase. That's it.
No, it's an increase, quite an increase. It's also an increase in regards to the time for reviewing.
But, Mr. Chairman, may I continue?
Please.
I'm kind of interested in how you use the information that you have regarding the certificate of the possession of explosives, the use of explosives. Give me an example of where that's benefited anyone other than to pay for itself.
The information, at least one circumstance that I can relate to that I was personally involved in is what before I came to Salem and I was in a field deputy position in Southern Oregon. A certificate was issued to an individual who was later found to have a mental criminal record in another state. And through that, I was asked as a deputy to go collect the certificate and any explosives that individual had purchased. Through that record check, we did get some explosives that the individual had hidden, did not store properly, did not store for his own use to hide for whatever use. I personally don't know what he intended to use it for, but it was assured, at least by the law enforcement people I worked with in that particular apprehension, that it was not for normal constructive use, but for some criminal endeavor. So there was some public safety in that.
Do I need a certificate to purchase explosives?
Yes, you do.
Okay. By the state, though?
By the state.
Not the feds?
Not the feds. The feds ask you to fill out a form signing a statement that you have not been convicted of or user of or that type of thing.
Any further?
But if I wanted to buy some
TNT, for example, I would have to be certified.
Yes.
Crazy. If you want to buy some TNT, let me know. We'll leave town.
There is an ability for a certificate holder to transfer materials from himself to another person. The owner of a logging company may have the certificate, and his employee would handle or do the work. We can do it that way. Mr. Chairman,
I got a couple of questions that I'd like to ask. One is, the change of the law is not going to change anything that's happening now. In other words, an individual farmer that wants to blow a stump or something, he's got to buy presently a one-time only certificate to purchase maybe some dynamite or something. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And this would change the law so that on an annual basis of $20... For an annual basis, it would be required to purchase dynamite for the same individual?
Technically, that's what the law would say. The exposure to that is significantly less. Most of our certificate holders are one-time users.
But the way I read the bill, is that not correct? That same person that bought a one-time license for $5, the farmer that wants to blow some stumps now and then in his field, now would be charged $20 annually.
Or each time he renewed his certificate.
Or each time he renewed.
There's a renewal now, is there, Chairman?
No. That's
what
he's saying. There's no renewal.
I misunderstood, Mr. Chairman.
No. Well, let's see.
Can I ask
Representative Gilmore through?
Well, I've got one other question that's not related, but I probably should wait.
If you'd care to wait, Representative Campbell?
Well, I was just going to ask the question. I misunderstood you. I thought you said the last legislative session we required to go to an annual fee.
Right. What it did is put a time period. The certificates were only good for 1 year from the date of issue.
Okay. So the difference between that and this bill is that you've increased the price for that time certificate from $5 to $20. You haven't changed the time period.
You haven't changed anything in the length or qualities or anything else in the legislation. The only thing, Mr. Chairman, that we were trying to do in this particular thing was make the process for handling a certificate cost effective, and secondly, eliminate duplication of effort in the manufacturers and dealers section.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Otto.
If I want to shoot some rocks on the Sandy River, and I go up to Holt's magazine up at Orion, and I go in and say, Mr. Holt, I want to buy six sticks of rock powder, what's the procedure?
He would give you an application, or he would say he could not provide you with the explosive until you had a certificate of possession. The actual procedure is to, I'm sure he would instruct you to contact the county sheriff, Multnomah County Sheriff, who has the applications there. The applications are filled out, and a local check is made to see if you have any run-ins locally with the law, and an application with the $5 fee and his sign-off on that application comes to this agency where it is...
Is that the Holt's?
The sheriff. The sheriff signs off at that particular point. And then, as indicated earlier, the application is sent through the state police for a complete record check, through state hospital for a mental check, to assure compliance with this thing. When it comes back through that process with an affirmative and many of them have some types of criminal action from not vehicular type thing, driving violations, but other types of things, assurance that it does not fall into the parameters of the statutes, Oregon statutes, and then a permit is issued. If it falls into the parameters of Oregon statutes and is in compliance with Oregon law, but does conflict with federal law, we still issue a permit, but we notify the sheriff, we notify the explosive dealer that based upon our information we have found something contrary to federal regulation, but we are charged to issue the license based on the law that we have. And then it goes back to the applicant, and he can get the permit. He can get the
another closure. Question?
Yes, Representative Adam.
How long does this take?
Approximately 10 days.
10 days. And these applications that you receive, how many of them do you turn down? 10%, 20%, 50%, or what?
I think maybe 3%, roughly 2 to 3%.
2 or 3%. And you indicated that most of those possessing a certificate are one-time users.
A large percentage of them, yes.
How many? 50%?
Oh, I would imagine.
50%.
So you're going to charge me $20 to shoot some rocks on the Sandy River, and I'll probably never renew. And we're talking about 2 or 3% of the people. Now, if I may, Mr.
Chairman. No, continue on.
Do you think that these 2 or 3 people that have been denied, 2 or 3% of the people that have been denied, and we're talking 600 applicants, right? 3% would be 18 people, right? Do you think that this law is keeping those people from possessing explosives?
I would like to think so. However, I'm like anything, if a person wants to acquire something illegal, there's always ways to get around it.
And there's no instruction in the use of these explosives?
Not from our agency, no.
In other words, I can go and buy my rock powder and you don't tell me the necessary precautions to look out for or anything like that. You're assuming that I should know that?
Assuming that you should know that, yes. Now, do you have no statutory authority to evaluate competency? That is one area that we discussed, and the new state fire marshal in Green, coming from Florida, thought that that might be an appropriate thing to do. In our early discussions with the law enforcement agencies in dealing with this particular bill and some of those areas, they were concerned with the amount of impact that put on the local sheriff because they start the initial investigation in regards to how much time staff can take to evaluate those people. Did they have competency? Or did we have to set up an examination process for licensing explosive people as far as blasting the use of the explosives?
All right, now this, if I may, Mr. Chairman, this logging contractor that has 10 boxes of powder in this magazine, you say there's no restriction upon that logging contractor to give or sell to some other individual?
Yes, there is. There is a capability to transfer someone within his control. He legally has the same responsibility as anyone else. He cannot sell to someone without a permit.
Basically. Right, but he could give and transfer half a box of powder to Jones Logging Company down the road.
Not illegally without a certificate for possession. No one can have explosive.
I misunderstood. I thought that there could be a transfer.
There's a capability of transfer, but it's for a particular purpose and a same type of clearance process has gone through.
The person that is going to be the recipient of the explosives has to have a certificate.
Right. Yes.
Okay. One other question.
Would you get a clarification on that point? I don't mean to interrupt, but say the owner of a company as a former someone else, he says, you know, here's the powder, go blow it. Has he got that right? Transfer it to an employee without first having a certificate.
With his own company, there's a transfer thing that can't allow under his control. And there's a
responsibility, though.
Not to get out of anyone that's not authorized to have the powder, either through direct transmit of yourself to your employee through he has under your direct supervision, you're seeing him handle it, take care of it. You're possibly not holding it in your hand yourself. But you can't give it to someone else outside your control. You can't transfer it to anyone without a
I didn't mean to interrupt your representative. Please continue.
Could you, by the time of our next meeting, and I'm not prepared to move this out today.
No, absolutely not.
By the time of our next meeting, could you provide us with a list of not names, but John Does who have been refused a certificate and why they were refused the certificate?
I'm sure we can. I don't know how far back we can go, Representative Otto.
I'll go back. What the heck? Go back 2 or 3 years.
I'm sure both instances where we've had the issue because Oregon regulations or statutes were different than federal, mm-hmm. and where we've not issued for mm-hmm.
okay.
noncompliance.
Are you sure, Representative? Yeah. Have you a question, Representative Gilmore?
A non-related question.
Please ask it.
Just out of curiosity, is it difficult for you to, being the assistant fire marshal, to have a beard when it's against regulations? For a fireman to have a beard under the Accident Prevention Division? And wouldn't you agree in that it's kind of silly that the Accident Prevention Division would pass a law, a rule, prohibiting the wearing of beards for volunteer firemen?
Representative Roberts,
I'm Gilmore.
I'm scoring the lunch. You got me in a pretty rough spot. But I will say that, and to answer your first question, yes, sometimes it is uncomfortable to wear a beard. There are in the fire service. If I were directly involved in training or a firefighting crew where I had to wear a mask to provide safety to myself, where I was directing or working with people who were under my responsibility to ensure safety and my safety, their safety depended on my safety, then yes, I could not wear a beard. I would support that wholeheartedly. A mask is what it's all about. The mask fits your face and wear self-contained breathing apparatus and work in an untenable atmosphere. My position as the Chief Deputy State Fire Marshal is somewhat jeopardized by my wearing a beard, in that this agency should be setting an example for all firefighters in regards to that.
Well,
however, I do not, in my position, have not for the last 17 years been on a fire scene fighting fire, and so my needs for a mask would not be necessary.
Well, I apologize to the committee. It just seems kind of odd. I've had some complaints with some volunteer fire people over that.
Yeah,
and they can't quite understand where those rules need to apply to a volunteer area. And I know of one circumstance where there is 25 volunteers and 20 of them have beards. It seems to think that if 20 volunteers in an area resign, there wouldn't be much of a volunteer fire department.
Mr. Chairman, I want to hear this.
I'm done.
Oh, yeah. Representative Campbell.
I'm just going to ask, would you shave your beard off if we can get Representative Gilmore to shave
his beard? I do have another. Yeah. I have another serious question, Mr. Chairman. Representative Campbell, is your department funded through the general fund?
No, it isn't, sir.
How is it funded other than by these fees?
A small amount is through user fees, through the exposure certificates and retail sales of fireworks and installation of liquefied petroleum storage. The rest of it is from 3/4 of 1% of the fire insurance premium tax.
So it's a dedicated fund.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Are there any further questions to this witness? Is there anyone else who wishes to give testimony on 2086 or 2186? Okay, we'll close the hearing on 2186. Thank you.
Oh. I asked you one question. I see that 2186 is not scheduled again next Thursday. It's been canceled. When is the next meeting so I can respond to Representative Otto's request?
It is scheduled for this coming Thursday.
The problem is, and I'll make the statement now, we had one of the representatives' wife passed away. Her funeral was going to be Thursday morning. They held flow off until 1:30. And we felt it wouldn't be enough time. Upon the speaker speaking to me and asking that I merely delay the committee hearing by an hour and continue on, and I respect his wishes, so it will be up on Thursday. And it's just been a little confusion here because we weren't certain as to how long the floor would go on, and I understand we don't have that many bills to look at on Thursday.
May I ask the committee's indulgence and ask that my staff, Eric DiCanio, present that information as requested by Representative Otto. I have budget hearing and a public hearing on the state building code.
That'd be fine. We'll start the committee meeting will start at 2:30 instead of 1:30 on Thursday.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Otto.
I will not be here on Thursday. However, that doesn't prevent you from taking action.
Well, we can take the testimony, and it will be on tape. So, Mr. Chairman,
may I make a suggestion?
Representative Campbell.
Since Representative Otto has raised the question, I don't think we ought to move the bill until he's here, so therefore it would seem appropriate for the testimony to be given when he returns, which would be the following week. And maybe that would not be an inconvenience for you, but it would make me feel better that he hears what the testimony is.
Good point. The one thing of it is, we may end up canceling then. After all, it's all according to what happens on this next bill, and this is why it's very hard to do with all that's come up to get a clear signal as to what comes up Thursday, but we can play it that way. It's just
we'll leave that up to the chair, but I do think that it's inappropriate for Representative Otto to have to listen to it on the tape, and we're not going to take action on it anyway until he gets back.
Good point. Okay, we'll you'll get some notice as to when.
We'll have to prepare for you.
Okay, we close the hearing on 2186. I'm going to bring back how...